All right. Thank you, Polina, for putting us on the stream. This is Julie Hewitt, the chair of the PMB. This is the regular PMB meeting for Thursday, January 5th. It is 8:39 p.m. on the East Coast. Aki, are you willing to be our recording secretary for this evening?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you. Would you take the roll, please?
Okay, so here you go. So, Teresa?
Present.
Teresa is here. Jim Dingman?
Here.
Jim is here. Vanessa Dixon-Briggs?
Here.
Vanessa is here. Sue Goodwin?
Present.
Sue's here. Heather Gray?
Here.
Heather's here. Donna Grimes? Donna? Okay, Julie Hewitt?
Here.
Julie's here. Vidya Jones? Okay, Alexa?
Here.
Okay, Maria Martinez?
Here.
There's her. Jinx McFadden?
Here.
James is here. Doreen Pagano?
Here.
Okay, Doreen is here. Sean Rhodes?
I'm here.
John is here. Jim Sagerton?
Here.
Jim is here. Sharon Salon? Sharon? I see you on the, this year, so let me get back. I'm here. Mark, no, said a note saying that he'd be absent. Beth Van Gutten?
Here. Here.
Beth is here. Beato Willis. Beato? Okay, Susan Young?
Here.
Susan is here. Stephanie?
Here.
Stephanie Ross? Okay, here. Arthur is not on yet. Okay. John Tatum.
I'm not necessarily expecting Mr. Tatum this evening.
Okay. All right. Polina.
I'm here.
Okay. All right. So 1, 2, 3, 4 missing. So 18 directors on.
All right. Thanks. We have quorum. Next item is reading. Sorry, folks. Next item on the agenda is reading the report out from the closed session of the December 29th meeting, which is the PMB met in closed session to discuss confidential legal matters and took no action. At its December 15th meeting in closed session, the Pacifica National Board suspended Bella DeSoto, a listener delegate on the KPFK local station board, pending a trial. Ms. DeSoto is excused from and shall not participate as a delegate at all LSB and Pacifica meetings, including any committees or events, pending further notification upon the conclusion of the trial. And next up is excused absences, and I believe those that we would be excusing would be Bert Cohen, Donna Grimes, Evelia.
Mark and Egberto.
Mark and Egberto. Thank you.
I'll move to excuse.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you.
Point
any
of
objections?
Information?
Yeah, go ahead, Teresa.
Did Sharam Salon sign in?
There's a little tile for her on the, on the Zoom. She has not acknowledged her presence yet, which must mean that, she has stepped away from her phone or hasn't unmuted it, but,
okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. So now we can mark you present. Thank you. Okay. So are there, any objections to, excusing those absent that I just listed? Hearing none, those absences will be considered excused. Next up is identifying timekeeper. I need someone to time people.
Julie, this is Polina, if
yes.
I may be recognized. Yes. I just like to know who iPhone is so I can rename them.
Oh.
There's a somebody who just joined us labeled iPhone.
James Sackerton.
Thank you. Done.
Got it.
No, okay. iPhone is still there.
Bill There's Foster.
It's Bill Foster.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
And, sorry, I had trouble signing in.
Welcome. I have James Sackerton twice.
You do have James Sackerton twice, and that's because one is his phone, which he does better with the volume and the voice. And so, yes, he is on there twice. He's beating technology by being on there twice.
Welcome to Mr. Foster.
Thank you.
Thanks. I do still need to identify timekeepers, so let's go back to that. Can I get someone willing to time people?
I'll do it, Julie. This is Heather.
Thank you, Heather. Appreciate that. And can I get someone willing to time items? That's Susan Young yet raising her hand. Thank you, Susan.
Because Darlene didn't beat me to it.
Yeah, well, Darlene's apparently slow this evening, huh? Or purposefully has her camera off for, you know, a reason. Sorry. Next up is, approving the agenda for the open portion of the meeting. That's a 5-minute item, Susan. And, I will quickly run through, what's on the agenda. Item number 3 is approving minutes from the December 29th meeting. Number 4 is an announcement. Number 5 is a motion to ratify the 2023 PMB affiliate representative director elections. Number 6 is the ED report and Q&A. Number 7 is the general counsel report and Q&A. 8 is committee reports, and there are a slew of them, though, as you all know, though most of them don't take very long, and we have the extra time for finance, programming, and strategic planning. Number 9 is unfinished business. Number 10 is new business. Number 11 is move into executive session at a time certain of 10:30. 12 is approval for the executive portion of the agenda. 13 is the executive ED report and Q&A. 14 is the executive general counsel report and Q&A. 15 is unfinished business. 16 is new business. 17 is what can be discussed with LSBs in closed session. 18 is report out. 19 is rise and report. And 20 is adjourn at a time certain of midnight. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
Approve. Move.
And a second. Anyone?
Second, Beth.
Thank you. Is there any discussion of the agenda? And at this point, we're just discussing the open session items of the agenda.
Chair, this is Vanessa. Yeah.
Vanessa, yes.
Okay, I don't know what announcement refers to.
Oh.
But
I'm sorry, it's Lawrence.
Okay, so there will be a moment of silence or something to that effect?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yes. Sorry, I didn't want to just say the whole thing as I was reading the agenda. Any other discussion of the agenda?
Yes.
Susan, go ahead.
Point of information?
Susan, then Beth. Go ahead, Susan.
Beth and I may be addressing the same thing. I was wondering where it is appropriate for us to get an update regarding the situation with KPFK. For instance, what communication has gone from to them about the actions of the PNB and any follow-up activities that have to do with the motion that we adopted?
That's a good question. We could have put a quick item after let's do it after the motion to ratify the affiliate director. So make it like item 5.5. So 5.5 would be update on KPFK, and we'll call that a 5-minute item. Does that make sense?
Sounds good.
Susan, did you just make a motion to amend the agenda?
Yes, I did. Oops. Yes, I did.
Great. Beth, would you like to second Susan's motion?
Sure.
Okay. Okay.
Why not?
Right. That was a sort of offhanded way of asking if you were doing the same thing, but I can't talk to you yet because first we have to, work on Susan's, amendment to the agenda. Is there any discussion of Susan's amendment to the agenda? Hearing none, are there any objections to Susan's amendment to the agenda to add that item? Hearing none, the agenda is amended. Beth, I'm recognizing you then.
Thank you. My question is, at what point and how would I offer an amendment to the closed agenda?
Oh.
To the closed session agenda.
Yes. So, you know, thanks to you all, for pointing out that, you know, when we went to this kind of new version of the agenda, you know, just having one big session where we break it into closed and open and closed portions of the same meeting. I put a new item on the closed session agenda, which is approval of the agenda for the executive portion of the agenda. So that's the first thing after we go into executive session. And so that would be
okay.
The point, Beth, at which it would be perfectly appropriate for you to, raise an item
or raise
whatever you wanted to discuss about the closed session portion of the agenda. And I see Jim Dingman's hand.
If I might follow up on that. Very briefly.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, I shall indeed offer an amendment to the agenda when we get that far. And for the information and consideration of the PNB, I've sent a closed session, a confidential motion for to be addressed at that time. So it should be near the top of your boxes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Motion to extend to exhaust the stack.
Is there a second to Susan's motion?
Beth, Jim, second.
Thank you. Any objections to the motion to exhaust the stack, which at the moment is Jim Dingaman? Hearing none, the motion to extend to exhaust the stack is approved. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to have an opportunity for Mr. Foster to introduce himself to the board. I guess that could be at the time the affiliate director is validated.
I think that makes sense. Yes, absolutely.
Right, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. We'll just consider that to be a part of that item on the agenda. Okay. Anything else? Are there any objections to the agenda as amended? Hearing none, the agenda is approved. Next item up is approving the minutes of December 29th. I believe Paulina sent them out.
Nope, this guy.
A couple days ago?
On Tuesday.
Yes. I do believe Tuesday was a couple of days ago, although I'm not 100% convinced. Thank you. So everyone should have them. And this is a 5-minute item on the agenda. Is there any discussion of the minutes from the December 29th meeting?
No, I move that we approve the agenda, the minutes.
Thank you, Jim.
I second.
Thank you, Susan. Any discussion? Oh, sorry. We already did have discussion. No, I already asked for discussion and Jim moved. Okay. So now discussion is appropriate. But I'm not seeing any hands or hearing anyone speak up. Are there, Are there any objections to approving the minutes as currently drafted for the December 29th meeting?
Julie, this is Paulina.
Paulina, go ahead.
Didn't you yourself have an amendment to offer?
I did. What was it, Paulina?
It
was something.
I wish I had it in my secretary email. It'll take me a second to find it.
And it will definitely take me a few minutes to find it. You know,
It's a bit complicated.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So, well, let's just deal with it right now. So, hang on one second. I will find the email that will, spell that out for people. When we, met last week, we were talking about this occurred on, I believe two motions. One that was, James McFadden's motion about, what happens if there are subsequent vacancies on the in terms of delegates, not on the PNB, vacancies on any of the LSBs in terms of delegates between now and the time that we hold, elections, knock on wood, hopefully in 2023, right? And we amended the language to say, at one point someone suggested amending to say, adding, it said something like all delegates or something, and we changed it to something like all individual delegates. I'm looking for the email. We changed it to all delegates. Here we go. We changed it to all delegates, all individual delegate vacancies. That's what we said. And, we changed all is someone asking to be recognized? Okay, I'll forge ahead here. We wanted to change all delegate vacancies to all individual midterm delegate vacancies. So that was one motion that was put on the floor. And then, and this is my bad, we put another motion to amend on the floor, and that was to change it to all delegate vacancies per Article 4 delegates, Section 9 removals delegates, paragraphs A to E, which enumerates all those reasons, right? So it's very clear about what were the reasons. And so we only voted by acclamation to approve one motion to amend, and it's not clear which of those two motions to amend was the one that we were actually voting on. So what I proposed was, in effect, mashing the two together so that it says, with any individual delegate vacancies per Article 4 delegates, Section 9 removal of delegates, paragraph A to E. So it basically mashes the two together. And so that way that kind of rectifies the fact that I got a little ahead of myself and we only, you know, approved one motion to amend when really technically there were two motions to amend. Are there any objections to amending the minutes in that way?
Second. I second the motion.
Thank you. So I move that we amend the minutes in that direction. Susan is seconding it. And so now the question is there any discussion of that? And I can paste it in the chat if people need to see it. And in
point
fact,
of information.
Yes, go ahead, James McFadden.
Can you just send out the whole wording?
Yeah.
In an email, that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. In fact, I know which email to send to everybody. Um, happy to do that. Are there any further questions? Are there any objections to amending the minutes, as I just suggested? Hearing none, are there any objections to approving the minutes of the December 29th meeting? Hearing none, those minutes are approved, of course, as always. You know, if people review the minutes later and determine that they find other corrections that need to be made, by all means, you're welcome to bring them up. Okay. And so that brings us to the next item on the agenda. You know, bad news tends to spread quickly, but in case there are people who haven't already heard, we lost a dear friend, delegate on the KPFK LSB and director on the PMB from KPFK, Lawrence Reyes on New Year's Eve. In fact, he passed away after a relatively brief illness, and he was hospitalized. And so what I thought it would be appropriate to do would be first to hold a moment of silence for Lawrence, and then you know, give people a few minutes to, you know, if they wanted to say anything. Some people participated in an appreciation of Lawrence that we were able to hold on Friday, the day before, and but some others might not have been able to participate and might want to speak. So at any rate, first let's have a moment of silence in memory of Lawrence. Thanks. Is there anyone who would like to say anything or, you know, make any reflections for the benefit of the stream? Jim Dingman, go ahead.
I first want to extend my condolences to his family and loved ones.
Can't hear you.
I first of all want to extend my condolences to his loved ones and tell them that Lawrence's ideas will be sorely missed. I wanted them to also know how much I enjoyed talking to Lawrence as a fellow New Yorker, because it's very rare that I will be able to have detailed discussions with people on the PNB, for that matter, the LSB in New York, about the vagaries of the New York Yankees. And Lawrence was an assiduous baseball fan. He played baseball. We talked at great length about what it was like to be in the public school athletic league as kids in New York City. And, you know, while I disagree with Lawrence sometimes, as many times I agree with him, and again, my love and condolences to his family on his passing. A total sudden shock.
Thanks, Jim. Others? Go ahead, sure. Susan.
Others should speak more who knew him better. The first that I have met Lawrence is this year as a voice and as a tile and as a presence on Zoom. And as many know, he and I frequently disagreed, but I appreciated the fact that he was a vigorous advocate for the things that he believed. And I appreciated the fact that he and I sometimes took each other to task over behavior that might have been more civil. While I didn't agree, I felt affection for him. And like Jim, I wish his family well. This was stunning. It was a devastating loss and just a reminder that life is fragile. Thank you.
Was that Vanessa who wanted to speak a moment ago, or?
Yeah, I was trying to. I have to be brief. I just want to say in solidarity to my labor union brother.
Thank you, Vanessa. Marianne, go ahead.
All right, thank you. Well, you know, I also didn't know Lourdes very long, but the short time that I knew him, he really affected me as a good person and a true Pacifican in every way of the, you know, that you think of being a Pacifican. And he's going to be very missed. Thank you.
Thanks. Others. Some of us were out. I'll just add that some of us were able to attend the appreciation that was held via Zoom on Friday the 30th. And I just want others to know that it was an extremely well attended Zoom session. You know, and it was clear from that session that Lawrence had made a lot of friends. I mean, I saw some people that I hadn't seen for a couple of years. I too didn't know Lawrence all that awfully well. I've only known him in the 2 years that I've been on the PMB. And I said during the appreciation, I was kind of jealous of all the people who were on the Zoom who had known Lawrence for 10, 20 years, et cetera, you know, but that also, you know, he was such a likable and easy to get to know person that, you know, he kind of, you know, let you know who he was. And so you couldn't not like Lawrence. And I really did know an awful lot about him in part. And this was another thing that several people said, you know, just fondly remembering the many times during our PNB meetings when he would say, well, as my mother always taught me, and then he would, you know, give some phrase, and then he would go into how it was appropriate for, you know, whatever consternation point was going on right then and there in a PNB discussion. And so many, many people appreciated him for that. Another thing that a lot of people said was, you know, they think of Lawrence as like this, you know, very, you know, larger than life human being and a strong individual and, you know, found it astounding that, you know, he was being felled, by an infection. And I too agree. It's really still quite difficult to believe. I know his family had to make a really tough decision and I feel for them being in that kind of position. And, you know, so, my thoughts also go out to his family and his close friends. And the other thing that I learned was he liked to go on driving trips a lot. So anyone else? And I will sorely miss Lawrence. Absolutely.
Thank you, Julie, and others who are commenting on Lawrence's life. Appreciate it.
Thanks. And by the way, that means Donna Grimes is here. Hockey.
I just want to add.
Go ahead, Sue.
I didn't know him at all. So I've been paying very close attention to what other people are saying about him. And what I hear is this was a man who ascribed so closely to progressive and humanitarian values that are at the core of what we are trying to do. I wish I knew him, and I want to pledge to continue on in his memory.
Thanks, Sue. Anyone else? All right. Lawrence leaves large shoes to be filled, that's for sure. And so we will find out in principle from the KPFK LSB who Lawrence's replacement is, but that's for another day.
This is James. May I say something?
Yes, go ahead, Jim Sagerton.
Yeah, I too was at that appreciation of celebration of Lawrence's life, and many people were wishing him a speedy recovery and, you know, get better soon, that sort of thing. And towards the end, one of his family members came on and said, Lawrence is dying. You know, that was basically a very plaintive statement that she made. And there's a phrase that he used to end his emails with, or maybe it was the footer on his emails. And someone can help me with the pronunciation, but I think it's paliente siempre, which basically means ever forward or forward always. And that's how I'm thinking of Lawrence now. He took the next step, and I wish him ever forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, there were several PMB directors present on Friday evening. So,
Palante presente. That's what he said.
Thanks, Jim Dingman.
I think it's adelante siempre. Is it? Is adelante siempre?
That's the one.
Okay.
Thank you. All right. Moving on to the next item. So the next item is the motion to ratify the 2023 PMB affiliate representative director elections. This is a 5-minute item on the agenda. Okay. So, I just see a typo that I didn't fix in the agenda, in terms of the numbering, but let me, read the motion. Whereas the Pacifica National Board held elections of affiliate representative directors and the teller's report has been shared with all directors as of December 22nd, 2022. Therefore, be it resolved that the Pacifica National Board ratifies the teller's report and affirms the duly elected affiliate representative directors to be William Foster Jr. and Heather Gray. I move the motion. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you. Is there any, let me motivate the motion first just because, Bill Foster is present this evening. And so the basic idea why we have, why we have a motion to ratify an election is because technically speaking, our bylaws don't, give us the ability to hold elections electronically. We have agreed amongst ourselves that this is a useful practice for meeting remotely. And so, but nonetheless, the way to rectify that is to, you know, once the teller's report is presented to the PMB, when everybody has it, to then just pass a motion to ratify and name the people who've been elected to office, or in this particular case, the affiliate directors, the affiliate representative directors. And so, that's why we have this motion. And so is there any other discussion of this motion? James McFadden, I see your hand.
I got an email from Serene about when seating is supposed to take place. I assume it went to the entire PNB. And I'm just wondering if there's a single seating of all directors in late January, as she indicates in that email that's been passed by the directors, and she says in 2015.
So
I don't know the, I don't know the history of this well enough to be able to know
Madam Chair.
Anything more about it than that, but I asked the, bring up the question.
That's a good question. Go ahead, Teresa.
Yes, I think we made a mistake in not efficiently sending notice to our two newly elected affiliate directors and telling them, you know, about a little bit about the PNB and stating that all of the directors are officially seated on the 26th. And I'm sorry if he thought he was coming on this meeting going to be voting tonight, but I sure am glad he's on the call.
Yeah. Thank you, Teresa.
Best behavior for you, Bill.
Yeah. Thank you, Teresa. No, that's a very good point. You know, and I, have been remiss in not coordinating with, Paulina to make sure that, you know, one of us notified, the winners. It did occur to me that it was a good idea, even if we weren't actually seating the, all the new directors until the January 26th meeting. You know, that it would be a not bad idea as long as we were meeting weekly for Bill Foster to at least sit in and listen, even if he can't vote until the evening of the 26th, just to, you know, kind of a little bit get the hang of what we're doing here, and get a little bit acclimated, of course. The reason that, the meeting where all the new PNB directors will be seated is January 26th is that we've got some business that's on the agenda in a closed session for the January 19th meeting already. And so it would be inappropriate to seat the new directors any earlier than the 19th. And in fact, I think most of the LSBs won't have met to elect their, PNB directors until, sometime next week, at any rate. So, you know, basically the easiest thing to do is to just call the, and this is, I think, typically what, PMBs have done. I'm going to take a stab and guess that, you know, sometimes PMBs have had projects going on through the course of the year and then they're scrambling to get those projects done before a new PMB is seated. Because of course, if you have, changes on the PMB, then, you know, you kind of have to start over with, you know, projects that you're working on. So oftentimes, even in the best of times when the PMB really would only meet monthly, and that's remotely because in principle we used to meet in person and fewer than, monthly meetings. But, in principle, it's the late January meeting where the new directors, the new PMV is seated. So, go ahead, Jim Dingman.
Well, irregardless, I'd like Bill to have an opportunity to introduce himself. Thank you.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That is part of this. So, Bill, would you like to say hello to everyone and introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone.
Could we see a little more of your face?
Let me move. Okay.
Can we see the lovely person who's with you?
Oh, she's the love of my life. Pamela.
Hi. How are you?
Hi, Pamela.
That's my wife. Can't do without her. I can't do Zoom without her. But, I'm just, here to participate and to, help to represent the affiliates. And we are a struggling station in Montgomery, Alabama. We've gone through from building the tower to putting a pole up, to keep our station on the air. And we're moving forward and doing better. And our station is WUMO in Montgomery, Alabama, WUMO LP FM 94.5. I'm originally from New York. They call me a transplant, but my parents are from the South. And so we are part of the migration back to the South. My wife and I, my wife is a professor at the University of Alabama. I retired from Medgar Evers College in Brooklyn. And so I am, I've been active in a lot of different things, constantly doing movement stuff, SCLC, I'm on the state executive Democratic board in the state of Alabama. I worked for 30 years with AFRAM Harlem in Harlem, New York, with, Preston Wilcox, who was our leader in, doing social research and, movement, marketing, distribution type stuff, when we had snail mail. You know, we're working with different liberation and different black organizations around the country. And so now I'm doing radio and I'm learning every day, learning something new, and we're trying to stay on the air. But I'm glad to represent the affiliates.
Thank you, Bill. We look forward to working with you, or at least we look forward, in so much as, some of us will be returning to the, maybe returning to the PMB for the 2023 year. We don't, none of us yet, those of us who are elected to represent one of the five network stations, we don't yet know whether we're, reelected to the PMB. So that will come in a couple of weeks. So. Okay.
Okay. I'm here to listen, but, I don't have to stay on for long for the, closed meetings, but sometimes it's good to listen.
Yep.
And learn, cause it's new to me. I've never been at a full board meeting, and if it's okay, it's okay if I don't have to stay for this whole meeting until you're ready for me. It's quite okay. You're not hurting my feelings at all.
All right. Great. All right. With that, okay. I asked if there was discussion of the motion to ratify, the affiliate representative director elections, but I don't remember if I actually got to the point of asking, were there any objections to the motion to ratify? Hearing none, the motion passes without objection, and so now that makes it official, Bill. You will be, you know, seated at the January 26th meeting. So, and actually one of the reasons I didn't send an email out to the winners of the, and you too, Heather, to the winners of the affiliate directors elections was because, you know, when I hadn't sent it out by yesterday, I thought, well, okay, I might as well wait for the, you know, motion to ratify so that it is 100% official. So, okay. So then item 5.5 on the agenda was a 5-minute item that was an update on the KPFK situation. And so, moments ago while Bill was introducing himself, I sent you all the email that I sent to the KPFK LSB, informing them of the two motions that we passed last week. I sent it, I think I didn't send it till yesterday because when we met on the 29th, I said, oh, I know how I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to use the LSB email, the, you know, LSB at the KPFK, And then I realized that I wouldn't know who was included in that email list. So then what I needed to do was to make sure that I knew the email addresses for the people who are the current and delegates for the KPFK LSB who will continue to serve, and recognizing that there's what the KPFK LSB did was took action to change the membership of their LSB in contravention of both the bylaws and the motions that the PNB had passed about how we were going to handle the fact that we were not able to hold elections in 2022 for lack of funds. So I sent that email. I addressed it to the people that the PNB believes are currently on the KPFK LSB. I CC'd a handful of other people who were, as a courtesy. I CC'd the people who, the KPFK LSB elevated in their eyes, elevated to the LSB, just so that they would be aware of what was going on. And I included, the interim GM there, Michael Novick, and, John Gary, who's the secretary, and a non-voting member of their LSB. And there might be somebody else that I included. Oh, Bella DeSoto. I included Bella because, what I wanted to make clear was the people who were in the two list were the valid people who could vote in their LSB officer elections, and that the people who were in the CC list were not. And so there were three reasons why people were in the CC list: suspended, not properly seated, or a non-voting member of the KPFK LSB. And so you all now have that email. So they're the same motions that we passed, with the exception that, that thing where we mashed together two things. That's the version of the motion that I forwarded to them. So that's the update on
point of information.
Yes, go ahead, Teresa.
I would like you to read the second paragraph, which starts "to be clear."
Okay, that's in my email. That is not part of the motion. Okay.
Oh. Okay. Okay.
Does that help you? So it's my email, which says, here are the motions. One of them, was about, KPFK delegates and officer elections. And the other was really about, it included that, but it also addressed the director elections component as well. So.
Okay. So when you say hello all, that was an email.
It's everybody I sent the email to.
Okay. Well, I think that the second paragraph is not clear because it says "to be clear, comma, the two, colon."
So everybody in the two list.
Oh, okay.
Everyone that the email was addressed to, as opposed to people who were CC'd.
Okay, now I guess I understand. I hope they understand it.
Thank you for that. I'm writing myself a note, and maybe I will follow up to make sure that they all understood it.
I see. Okay.
Madam Chair, motion to extend.
For how long?
Exhaust the stack.
Okay, hang on a second. Oh, I see a couple of hands on the stack. Okay.
Beth were you seconding?
Yeah, Beth, were you seconding Susan's motion?
Yes, but I do have my hands.
Yeah. Yes, of course. That's okay. Are there any objections to the motion to extend to exhaust the stack of Beth, Ali, and Jim Dingman? Hearing none, we're extended till we get through those three. Beth, you're up.
Yes, I guess this would probably be a point of personal privilege. I have not yet received the email you just sent out, nor did I receive the email that went to the LSB yesterday, and I don't know why. But it's not the first time I've been, there are lots of documents that don't seem to be getting through to me. So
yeah,
I'm sorry to have to bother you about it, but especially for me, this is it's important that I see it. And so could I ask you, or Paulina, one or the other, to resend, or anybody else who has
it? I just forwarded it to you, Beth.
Thank you, Ali. I see it. It's right here. I've got it.
Great. It does seem, Beth, that sometimes emails sent to longish lists of people don't get to you, whereas emails sent from one person to you, that's the pattern I've observed, at any rate. But so, thank you, Ali, for doing that. Anything else, Beth?
That's everything for now.
Got it.
If there are any questions about the situation that I can answer, I'm happy to, although, you know, there's a lot going on. It's a moving target, so.
Appreciate
how much
that.
Help I can be. Thanks.
Got it. Thanks. Ali.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what Teresa brought up. I didn't understand that paragraph either until you just now explained it to me. I think it might be better if it was formatted differently to make it clear that the two colon addressees of this email are the KFP delegates, et cetera, and the CC colon addressees are not. I understand it now that you've explained it, but I seriously doubt that 100% of the people that receive this understand it, what it's trying to say. Thank you.
Point taken. I will. Thank you, Ali. You know, hearing multiple people.
Point of information.
Go ahead, Teresa.
Would it not help if you put the two colon addressees in parentheses?
I could do that.
And bold and italics.
Okay. Got it. Set it off. I hear you. You know, in the work culture in which I work day to day, things like that are understood. I get it that it's not understood everywhere. So thank you for, you know, keeping me honest. I will resend and try to make the to be clear, even clearer. Thanks for your help, folks. Really, I do appreciate that. You know, that's the problem. Sometimes it's so obvious in this head, and it's just not obvious to everybody else. Jim Dingman, go ahead.
Thank you. I would hope that our comrades in Los Angeles can resolve the differences they have with the rulings of the PNB rapidly, because to turn this into a test of wills is, again, a waste of energy and time, particularly since there are discussions that have to do with perhaps selling a building in Los Angeles or other things. And to have this happen at this time, it's most unfortunate. I hope that the PNB now and afterwards, I don't want it to be turned into the Pacifica Department of Justice all the time, having to deal with these kind of issues. We should be dealing with how to turn these stations around, not fighting over this stuff. And I hope that our comrades and compañeros in Los Angeles agree to be a little flexible about this, because no one's out to hurt them. We just have to move forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. We have some profound financial issues that we have to grapple with, and pretending we don't have those profound financial issues is not going to serve us well. Very much appreciated. Anything else on this topic before we move on? That brings us to the next item on the agenda, Stephanie, which is the ED report and Q&A, and we have a 20-minute item here. Take it away.
Thank you. We ended the financials for the end of this fiscal year still are under review and approval basically by the National Finance Committee. But in a nutshell, our total revenue for the end of our fiscal year was approximately $8.5 million. compared to the total revenue for fiscal year 21, which was $12 million. Our total operating expenses at the end of fiscal year 22 were $10.5 million, and that is a decrease from our total operating expenses from fiscal year 21 of $11.8 million. Our net income or net loss for fiscal year 22, we had a net loss of $1.8 million, and in fiscal year 21, we had net income of $185,000. So again, those are rounded up or rounded down, but we will have those consolidated financials for everyone once the National Finance Committee has a chance to just review it. The consolidated financials for each division was sent out to each general manager and business manager if the station had one for review, and we've had a few of the general managers give me a call and Markeisha a call just to go over things that they might have had questions with or any revisions that we need to make. And then once I have that information from all of the stations, then we will work on making any of those revisions as necessary, even though there were no major revisions. Some people just had some questions or greater clarification. Then that will be presented to the National Finance Committee for review and approval, and then that will be presented to the National Board. So I would assume that would be pretty soon. We are still seeking sort of a small group that includes staff and a few programmers to determine the needs for a new KPFK facility and an office for the archives if and when the Cuenca Boulevard West property sells. So I know that we'll have quite a few people that will want to have some input on that, but I'm going to be reaching out again to the staff and, again, a few programmers, and then of course the LSB as well, but just so we can kind of get a small working group and determine what it is that we need for a new home for both the KPFK and the archives. As I'm sure we'll have much more discussion on this, but if and when the KPFK facility and the archives building, that property sells, we are still discussing sort of what to do with the proceeds from that sale. But as we have discussed before, we are aiming to pay off the FJC loan, of course, set aside funding to find a new location for KPFK and the archives. And that would include covering any sort of relocation and build out expenses that are there. We are looking to also replace the funds that were seized from KPFA. And then I would like to be able to put aside some central service payments for each division. So, including the payments to the archives, ultimate goal would try to have at least like 8 months to 1 year of payments just to kind of give the divisions a chance to not have to worry about their central service payments and then give them the ability to reinvest what would be their central service payments into their own infrastructure. And I would be working with them and their LSBs as well to kind of determine what that would be. I'm assuming that would be close to the hiring of staff, catching up on any past due bills, equipment maintenance, upgrades, you know, anything that we deem that would be best to help stabilize their growth moving forward. We were able to make payroll throughout the month of December, and we made a health benefit payment on the 31st of December, actually the 28th, so it was due the 31st, and we made it just sort of at the nick of time of the healthcare benefits for the employees that were receiving healthcare through DC Health. All the other health benefits through Kaiser were paid, but we are behind quite a bit on our DC Health payments, but we were able to put through a payment and brought us current through October 31st. We still owe approximately $80,000 in past due DC Health payments, but we are working with them. They aren't taking any sort of payment plan, but health insurance benefits are continued, and we are working to try to get that $80,000 or at least another month's payment to them as soon as possible. There are a few board members who have spoken with a person who specializes in the monetization of archival materials. I've spoken with the individual as well. And he willing to meet with the archives director and myself, and then we will move that discussion to a larger group to talk about monetization of the archives. And he's willing to provide free of charge his expertise in just brainstorming and figuring out the best thing we can do, again, to monetize those archives. So as those discussions move forward and we have plans and brainstorms of what we can do, we will bring that to the board for discussion, and he will come to the board as well just to kind of give us a brief presentation. But I want to make sure that he's speaking with the archives director first, just to make sure that he's clear with everything that we can and cannot do with the archives. We have a meeting with the general managers this upcoming week to discuss the proposed programming suggestions that have come from the PNB, and I'm getting a determining with their input just a practical timeline and a viability of all of these suggestions. And then with their input, we can start to lay the groundwork to begin working on these suggestions that came from the PNB and working with the programming committee and the development committee on any of the fundraising action items, so we can start moving forward and implementing what can be accomplished with those suggestions. So the GMs are actually looking forward to that. We're meeting on Tuesday morning. We're also working on various disclaimers for the stations. Every day there seems to be at least another email or something that comes through regarding statements of things that are said on the stations. And we just want to make sure that we have the disclaimers that we need prior to certain programs, or that we post them throughout the day at various times. For each of these, you know, for a lot of the programs that are going on the air, that just doesn't hold us liable, or some of these, you know, statements that are made are not really, you know, possibly the feelings of the station, that kind of thing. We just need some various disclaimers for the stations. We're also working on getting privacy policies so we can put those on each website, so when people sign up for newsletters and what have you, they know exactly what it is that they're signing up for. And some of the stations have a privacy policy on their website, but a lot of them are outdated. And then also a DEI statement for the foundation in general that needs to be placed on the foundation website, and then also on each individual website as well. And a lot of those DEI statements are things that we need to have for our CPB funding as well as other foundations. We are going to be starting sexual harassment prevention and abusive conduct prevention training is going to be available for employees, paid and unpaid, and volunteers right now for KPFA, KPFK, and WBAI. We were able to locate training free of charge through the State of California Civil Rights Department and the New York City Commission on Human Rights Division. And so we are going to be rolling that out to the employees within the next couple of weeks, and also our paid and unpaid volunteers. And then we're also in the process of securing free trainings for our staff and volunteers in Houston, Washington, D.C., and Iowa, which is where our affiliate's office is located. The PNB is going to need to go through these trainings as well, but I'm trying to determine at this point if the PNB will need to go through only California trainings, since you're representatives of the foundation located in the state of California, or if you're just going to go through the trainings from your home station city. So once we determine that, then I'll let everybody know and give you the links for the trainings that you can go through. They're all online. They're, most of them are less than an hour. And when you finish, you get a certificate of completion that will then be forwarded to me. And then we can save that because we need to keep that on record between 2 to 3 years. But I'll send everything out once we figure out whether everybody's going to need to go through California or, excuse me, your local state. We're also starting employee evaluations in a couple of weeks. We are starting with self-evaluations for all staff members, including the IGMs. People will have approximately 3 weeks for their self-evaluation. They will then send those to their supervisor for review. The supervisors will then evaluate the employee, report to the GMs. If the supervisor is under the GM, they will then send those evaluations to me. I will meet with the GMs for the next steps, and then we will meet with the employee and the supervisors for the final evaluation. The LSBs will be involved in the evaluation process of the GMs as required after the self-evaluation and my evaluation of the GMs take place. So again, I will keep everybody updated on that as we move forward. I've also been speaking with a volunteer marketing manager. It's a person that does social media and marketing for a living, who was willing to provide a consultation for us and provide a social media plan and calendar for the foundation and for each station and division. I'm going to be discussing this further with the GMs during our meeting next week, so I can kind of get a better grasp on who is handling social media at each division. And I want to be able to complement what is already being done, not to step on anybody's toes or take anything over, but I do want to be able to minimize the number of people who have their hands in social media and marketing, just so we can move toward consistency with our outward face of Pacifica. So that's all I have for this, if anybody has any questions.
Well, I see a stack, and I see that you were trying to put your hand up, Teresa, too. So it's Jim, Beth, Susan, James McFadden, and then Teresa. Go ahead, Jim Dingman.
All right. Thank you, Stephanie. Can you clarify earlier in your report, I believe you said in 2021, just correct me if I'm wrong here, the gross revenue was $12 million, and the latest reports are it's $8.5 million as of last year, or this year. Can you clarify that?
Correct. And those are rounding up, just because the final figures, again, will be finalized with the National Finance Committee. But the total revenue for fiscal year ending 21 was $12 million. Fiscal year ending 22, $8.5.
Okay. Now, I know Michael Novick has sent a very interesting discussion done by a organization that's involved with community radio about how stations have had tremendous drops in gross revenue since the pandemic. I think the numbers were quite startling, 30, 40, 50%. We're talking about, what, $3.5 million. So what do you attribute that to? And how do you evaluate the kind of measures that are being adopted around the system to try to rectify that problem?
Well, I have to take sort of a closer look as to what was different from 21 to 22. I don't know what really was happening with 21 as far as have there been programming changes. I know that there was definitely a decrease in the number of staff that we had. And some key staff members at certain stations and certain divisions were dropped and let go. I don't know if that happened in 21 or the year prior. So, I mean, obviously a decrease in our listenership. And I think that kind of I still don't think that a lot of the stations know exactly what their target audience is. And it's very difficult for a lot of the stations to realize that we can't be everything to everyone, and we need to pick what that market is and then make our programming for that market. I think that there's just been a lot of programming that's all over the place and isn't really consistent. And when you tune into the station, you can tune in at different times at some of the stations, not all of them, but you can tune in at different times throughout the day, and you'd swear that somebody came in and changed the dial on your car radio, because it just sounds like you're listening to something completely different. So that's the outreach to who we actually want to speak to, and is just not there. I think there's just a lot of programming that's flailing. Our operating expenses did decrease. I mean, we went from 11.8 to 10.5 as far as our operating expenses. But we obviously need to focus on, again, our programming and reaching an audience and determining who that audience is, and marketing just to them.
Beth.
Yes, I wanted to ask if this report from the executive director is available in writing, especially all the figures that she read to us. I would appreciate receiving it in writing, please. Because I'm much more likely to be able to report accurately from it when I report back to our LSB if I have things like the many different figures in writing.
Thank you.
Yeah, the financials, the consolidated financials with the actual figures will be given to everyone once the National Finance Committee has a chance to review and approve that. The general managers do have the full financial consolidated reports for their division and also for the foundation as a whole. So for example, KPFK, Michael received his spreadsheet, and then a spreadsheet for the entire foundation, which includes not an individual tab for each station, but the consolidated for all of the divisions. So that has been shared with the general managers, and I don't know if they have shared it with their LSBs or their treasurers, but I can definitely send you the full financials once that's approved by the National Finance Committee.
Thank you.
Susan's up next.
There Susan, you go. Yes. I wanted to say I'm delighted to hear that you were meeting with the general managers and chewing on. There were many, many ideas that came out of strategic planning. There was a list of motions that we forwarded to the programming committee for the programming committee to be able to consult with management. And so I'm assuming that this is follow through on that. Tip of the hat to Jim Dingman. Basically the committees didn't write these. He wrote them and he called upon many years of experience. And I know just looking at the one that had to do with, integrating social media. One of the ideas was dedicate two staff people to do something, and we don't have two staff people. I'm delighted if you were bringing in people who consult with us about social media. And also one of the things that strategic planning was going to feature this evening was a conversation conducted by Mark Van Lendewit, who has a lot of expertise. He's being cycloned right now. So I hope that he can be a part of that conversation next week.
Thanks, Susan. Did you want to react at all, Stephanie?
Well, I will definitely bring him in as we move forward with the social media and the marketing aspects.
Got it. James McFadden's next.
I have two questions. The first is the financials. Did that $12 million include government revenue, or was it all $12 million from listener support? And then the second question, you talked about training. I already go through training through UC Berkeley here in California, and I'm assuming that if I have certificates from that training for the equivalent, I can just use that rather than have to go through it a second time.
Yes, you do not have to go through training multiple times.
Okay, and the
I believe with the revenue, the numbers were pulled from the consolidated end of fiscal year 21 financials, but I believe that the PPP loan also included the revenue from that was put in the 2020 and the 2021 revenue. And so that was roughly $1.2 million each year. I believe we received about $2.4 million total for that.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, motion to extend to exhaust the stack.
And for the record, the stack is well, it's not James McFadden anymore. It is Darlene, Teresa, and myself.
Second.
Thank you, Jim Dingman. Are there any objections to the motion to extend to exhaust the questions from those three? Hearing none. Darlene, you're up.
Yes, Stephanie. Could you take just a moment to, or I'll help you, but talk about the tiny bit of good news that KPFA has been able to manage around the property tax, just in case there's not a clear cut good news running around.
Yes, well, thankful to you for reaching out, and Darlene is serving as the, not even the middleman, but the go-to person for getting the property tax paperwork put directly into the hands of the people that need be. And she will be signing the documents and working with the attorneys that we have here in LA and just kind of cutting out multiple people as the middlemen to get that moving forward. So Darlene called a couple of days ago, and she said that her goal for this new year was to see that that was finished. And just by being on the phone with her for 30 to 40 minutes, we will be able to get this accomplished within a next week or 2 weeks. So one New Year's resolution you can check off as successful. Thank you.
And I'll I'll just tell the PMB, all, what that does is it clears the obstacles out to, I would say discuss, but we may not have that much negotiating power with the county tax assessor as to what our property tax bills should have been since 2014. And then we will have to pay that amount. But it will be a fraction of what's been hanging over our heads. Thank
you. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead, Teresa.
So this sexual harassment / abusive conduct prevention, does that qualify as anti-racism training?
I will have to take a close look. I took part of the training today already before I looked at the California or decided yes to go ahead with the California training. I took it myself just to kind of see what it involved. It doesn't have specifically a module on anti-racism, what is required through the state is the bullying and the sexual harassment. So abusive conduct training, it was all put in the same category. It's harassment can be not only just this, at least with California, not just sexual harassment, but abusive conduct can also be comments and statements that are directed towards somebody's ethnicity, their culture, their sexual orientation. So it's kind of a broader statement of abusive, but not specifically just toward race.
Well, can you say in an open meeting why KPFT wouldn't qualify for this?
Oh, I just haven't looked right now I haven't found a free service in Houston. So right now we have the New York City Commission on Human Rights Division, which will be providing free training for New York, WBAI, and then the State of California Civil Rights Department will be providing the free training for KPFA and KPFK. So we'll still go through most likely the state or the State Department or the city commissions for Houston, Washington, D.C., and Iowa. They just can't take employees in those states, can't take trainings from other states.
Okay.
And each of them have different, like California, it needs to be renewed every 2 years. We have to keep the certifications on file, I think, for 5 years, but they have to renew it every 2 years. In New York, I believe it's every 3 years they have to take the training, and then we have to keep the certificates on file for 5 years. I may be wrong with that, but each state where we have an employee has a different ruling as to what's mandatory, how often it's renewed. And now we're just in the process, as I said, of trying to find something that is free within that state. So they'll be soon following.
Right. You said something about self-evaluations. And am I to understand, and I know that our interim general manager, I think, has he passed 6 months? So we need to initiate our process of evaluating our interim general manager. And are you saying that you are initiating evaluation of all the GMs and interim GMs? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we're initiating evaluations for all the employees, every employee.
Okay.
And that will start, as with most companies and organizations, the employee evaluation process begins with a self-evaluation.
Okay. All right. So you are going to ask every employee that's paid to do a self-evaluation. Is that right?
With the GMs, it's also, we have a lot of volunteer staff at this point. So it's paid and unpaid that right. Normally would be filled by a staff. So the IGMs will be doing self-evaluations as well.
And if you have a document for self-evaluation of boards, if you could possibly send it to me, I'd appreciate it because I think it would help us if we self-evaluate. Thank you. And I have more questions regarding finance that I think needs to go into executive session. So looking forward to talking to you later. Thank you.
Point of information, Madam Chair.
Yes, Jim Dingman.
Sexual harassment training is a requirement for CPB funding. So if we're going to actually apply for it this year, which I believe we're going to, we have to have mass sexual harassment training throughout all the units of the system. Thanks.
Thanks. I'm next on the stack. The point I was going to make was also, James McFadden raised that it related to the revenue. So it is true that the PPP forgiveness counted as revenue in partly 2020, but 2021. So that's a good chunk of the difference, but it does not explain the entire amount. You know, it's maybe about half of it. We also got the EIDL loan in 2021, but I want to point out that the EIDL loan is a loan, so it is not revenue. It is, you know, the cash that we got is the asset, the short-term asset, and the having to repay the loan is the liability, but that's not the same thing as income. So, that can't be forgiven. So,
we had two PPP loans, that that were over $1 million, and they got forgiven, and the accountants count that then as revenue.
Correct.
So $2 million, $2.5 million that came in that way in somewhere, probably both in 2021.
We would have to look carefully to check and see whether they were both in 2021 or, whether one was in. I know we got the funds in 2020 and then 2021 as the original PPP loans, but you're right. The forgiveness is, when it becomes revenue. So, so we'll see, but yes, that, go ahead, Jim. Yes, Jim Sagerton might know the answer.
I believe Arthur's correct on that. The PPP forgiveness happened in the same year. And so that does account for 2.2 million or 2.4 million of that difference.
Got it. Thank you.
Two drafts of 1.2 million.
Awesome. Great. And then the only other point I was going to make, Stephanie, was, I think we ought to consider asking LSB delegates to do the sexual harassment training and anti-bullying or whatever the other one was called. So, but maybe that's a motion to be passed another day. To have it, you know, it makes sense to do this throughout Pacifica if staff have to do it, then why not the delegates too? So anyway, that ends this item. And then the next item on the agenda is an open session general counsel report and Q&A for 10 minutes. That is, if you have anything you'd like to report, Arthur.
The only non-closed session thing is that anyone that wants to, if they can figure out how to get online to listen the argument in New Day, in Pacifica versus New Day, is the 19th at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And all the papers are in. And interesting, we had a discussion last week, or was it last week? Yeah, last year. The judge had given us an opportunity to make one more submission, and I did submit a brief, which I sent out to the PNB, because I think it's the clearest, simplest discussion of the legalities around the referendum. And New Day didn't submit a new brief. So somebody said, why did you give them another shot? But they didn't take it. So they clarified one little thing, but so that's it. That's in the judge, and it's the way the court functions is especially when they have now a few weeks to think about it, they issue a tentative decision the day before, the night before, the afternoon before. So we'll see what happens, but hopefully that little expensive adventure will be over one way or the other on the 19th. And other things I have to report on, I'd rather do in closed session.
Got it. Thanks. I see Teresa and Jim Dingaman's hands up. I'm just checking to make sure that you've just put it up. Nope, that's an old hand. I can lower it. Jim Dingaman, is your hand up
for
Arthur?
Yes,
yeah, go ahead.
Arthur, can you explain to the stream the significance of this hearing on the 19th, what's it all about, for those who may not know who are listening?
Oh, so what happened is we both agreed that there were no factual disputes, although there were lots of factual disputes. There were no relevant factual disputes to the legal dispute that we have. And I think that the judge will see that there are no relevant factual disputes. You know, whether somebody said X or Y may not be relevant. And so this cross motions was for what's called summary judgment, which is basically a ruling by the court based on the papers that are submitted, as opposed to a trial with testimony, etc. So it could end with the judge. Both sides asked for summary judgment on their. There's three issues. The first issue is the referendum and whether the New Day proposals were properly decided by splitting the vote into two classes. The second issue involves the KPFK election and whether four candidates who would have otherwise won, we're not contesting that, were properly disqualified. And the third issue is whether New Day Pacifica has the right to use the Pacifica membership list to raise money to sue Pacifica, which they say is a constitutional right that they have.
Any other questions for Arthur?
Teresa, go
ahead. I saw Teresa's hand first, but then I'll call on you, Jim. Go ahead, Teresa.
Fine.
You're on mute, Teresa.
I'm sorry. Did you say, Arthur, that you did not dispute the fact that New Day's claim that four candidates that were endorsed by New Day were unfairly removed from the voting list after people had voted for them?
No, I didn't use those words. I said we didn't contest the fact that if they hadn't been disqualified, they would have won. I didn't use the word unfairly. That's the issue is not unfairly, but the judge is going to decide if it was improper to have done that. So that's the issue. And
okay.
You know, well, and that would scramble things up at KPFK, huh?
Depends upon your point of view.
No, it would scramble things up. It would scramble it up no matter what your point of view is. Because there would be four people who would have won who aren't serving. Do they get to serve? Blah, you know, in the middle of all this other stuff. We'll see. And Teresa, I did appreciate your comment at the end of our last year session. I did appreciate it a lot.
My pleasure.
Jim Sagerton. Go ahead.
Thanks, Arthur. I wanted you to comment, if you wish, on the fact that, you know, we had an opportunity to possibly have the court reject the New Day case based on the fact that they didn't file their papers in a timely way. Would you like to say anything, or is there anything appropriate to say about the advantage of having this matter decided on the merits as opposed to sort of a technicality, and the finality? If this had been decided on a technicality, might have we have had to go for a whole nother round?
Well, it wouldn't have been decided on a technicality. You know, there's been so many submissions, the judge would have still considered whatever things have gotten into the record one way or the other. I just don't like litigating that way. Like, it's like do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Have I had a bad day or filed something 10 minutes late? Yep. And it's to Pacifica's advantage not to have things decided that way, especially given some of the acrimony that has existed around this. Let the judge decide based on all the papers and all the arguments being in there, and nobody saying, oh, it wasn't fair.
That's basically what I meant. Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Got it. Any other questions for Arthur? All right.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Darlene, go ahead.
Okay. Actually, I probably might have needed to ask this of Stephanie, but Arthur, since you're involved, I'll ask you. Did the FJC interest payment of the end of December get made?
You know, one comment on this. I'm not sure how it wound up in Christina Huggins's last email attacking Mr. McFadden, but so she said we defaulted. That's not true. We didn't default. And the payment will get made, and that has been worked out with FJC, and I will report on it more in the closed session.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thanks. If there are no further questions for Arthur, then it is time to move on to the next item on the agenda, this being the first meeting of the month. We go through committee reports. I don't believe there's anything from the audit committee to be reported. I will report for the coordinating committee that we met and we developed at least a good chunk of the agenda for this evening's meeting and, you know, heard out a whole bunch of people on points of view. Next up is the finance committee. Jim Sagerton, is there, I gave you all 10 minutes, but I'm not sure that you have anything, whether you have anything to report since the last meeting. I'm just not clear.
Yeah, I don't need 10 minutes, but I would like to say that we do anticipate going over the finally completed 2022 financials at the next meeting, as Stephanie's already pointed out. We also hope to review the WBAI budget at our next meeting, which is Tuesday, January 10th. And there was some commentary. I just want to make sure everybody understands. There was some commentary about the fact that we decided not to meet in between the holidays, between Christmas and New Year's, and canceled the meeting. And people were saying, oh, how terrible. How can you not meet? I just want everybody to understand that the NFC has been meeting every week since about October, and prior to that, we've been meeting every twice a month for about 2 years. The normal meeting span is about a month for standing committees. So we've really ratcheted up what we're doing, and now when we miss a meeting, we're hearing, oh, how terrible you didn't have a meeting. But actually, we're meeting a lot and doing a lot. So we're going to pick that up again on January 10th. With the WBAI budget and the consolidated financials. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. Does anyone have a question for Jim? All right. Next up is the governance committee, which I don't believe has met recently. Also the elections committee, which I also don't believe has met recently. But I'm pausing for a moment in case someone wants to disabuse me on either of those. And then next up is the programming committee. Heather, do you all have a report?
Yes, no, I must apologize. We haven't met lately either, but we're planning on doing that soon, but we haven't. We have a report at the next meeting.
That's fine. Strategic planning. I gave strategic planning 20 minutes this evening because Jim Dingaman asked me to because he wanted Mark Van Landwit to report on some I'm not going to use the right term. But at any rate, Mark can't participate in the meeting this evening. But Jim, do you want to give an update? And I don't know if we'll need the whole 20 minutes, but nonetheless.
No, of course not. No, of course not. I'll be quick. And also the governance committee did meet recently. It basically discussed the situation in Los Angeles. So anyway, Mark is going to come and talk, hopefully we can do this next week to talk about, programming, et cetera. Basically we've been having workshops. We're going to have a formal meeting of the committee next week. We are, talking about a draft strategic plan. Okay. So let's let that be known. The consensus in some of the meetings has been in the workshop meetings, and this has let your members participate, is that basically people feel the underwriting motion should be taken advantage of. I want to correct some misconceptions about the underwriting motion. Some people argue that the underwriting motion was debated in secret and discussed in executive session, and that is not what occurred. That the underwriting motion was discussed openly in committee meetings and in this body itself many times. And was passed, with debate in this, body, when it was finally done. So it's not been a secret. And one of the things we felt is that all the units should take advantage of the underwriting motion to bring in additional revenue immediately. Another aspect of this was since we did get the, green light to go ahead with the CPB funding, there has been, meetings with people, in, other, stations in the network. In the affiliates program who get money from the CPB. And, the idea is to really ramp up the, advice of general managers who receive money from the CPB, and really figure out some way to massively train people throughout the system because we haven't gotten any money from them for a couple of years now. And so there's a lot of not really well developed ideas about it. And it's going to be a little bit of a hard task to actually have everybody do it. But there is a way to do it. That's one of the things I want to say that happened as a result of one of the conversations we had with the general manager of the public radio station at the University of New Mexico at Albuquerque. So that's something that I want to is going to happen and will happen. And then some ideas that people had about programming. Again, the one thing I'll just share, which we can talk perhaps at another point because it does deal with programming, is that I've constantly gotten people saying to me that they want debate in Pacifica. They want alternative views clashing, something like the equivalent of Intelligence Squared that's done with the BBC. The development and fostering of the anti-war sentiments nationally and globally. There's going to be a march in Washington in February. Another aspect of this is people feel we do not want to fall behind in the audit process the way we were beforehand, the AFR process. We don't want to have that problem having to be solved by bringing NEDA in. We don't have NEDA anymore to help us. Also, people were criticizing the lack of a positive vision about ideas that are being proposed in the stations in terms of politics. And they felt that one person used the term grievance radio, which, again, I just share with that. Everybody felt that our lack of exploitation of Roe v. Wade is just a big mistake, and we should really hammer on that, because we're the only media outlet in the United States that would have the ability to do that. Others talked about science talk shows not being there. But I just wanted to share those. Those are some of the ideas that happened in the past couple of weeks. And we also felt that a strategic plan has to be flexible, has to be reevaluated every 3 months. It can't be rigid. We've got to ebb and flow. We've got to bob and weave with what kind of situation we're doing. And we have to recognize that we're going to start off with little to no resources. So we have to be very creative. That's the report.
Thanks, Jim. Does anyone have questions for Jim Dingman? I see your hand, Susan Young. Go ahead.
I just had a quick comment, which is, yes, we did it. There was extensive conversation about discussion about, and rounds about underwriting. We adopted the motion. There was some comment by the, parliamentarian that the motion was needed to be kind of reworked so it was in better motion format. There's a start on that that's on our agenda, but not prepared to deal with now. Do you see where, meaning, sorry.
I could add to the, we could deal this evening with, the cleaned up underwriting motion.
And what I'm saying, we should not.
Oh, okay.
The cleaned up underwriting motion is not yet adequately cleaned up.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Well, I included it on the agenda this evening, but we could always, when we get there, perhaps have a discussion about whether to postpone or not. Heather Gray, I see your hand.
Yes, I just wanted to mention, actually, as far as programming is concerned, that one of the things we brought up is about the importance of educating the public on some of the issues that have been denied, actually, in terms of education, such as critical race theory and the 1619 Project and so forth. And I know I sent a note out to the board about this, that the affiliates are now working on the 1619 Project and working with the New York Times on this. So I'm going to be providing more information, Julie, about this as we go along. Hopefully really soon I'll be reporting to the board, giving an update on that. So I just wanted to share that as well. Thanks.
Great, thanks. Jim, I see your hand.
Yeah, I wanted to add to what Heather had to say. Remember, we had a big debate, an argument about national fundraising, et cetera. And one of the issues that came up was, you know, we had a Gerald Horn participated in one of the programs. You know, we have the ability with planning to do interesting national programming on these questions. You know, Kimberly Crenshaw, who is one of the original people who actually did the essays or in the early 80s on critical race theory. You know, she's somebody who's been very generous with her time with the station in New York because she teaches at Columbia Law School. So there's all these opportunities we have. You know, we talked about incarceration issues, you know, all sorts of issues about that. There's lots of things we can do. And I know the motion that was passed was not one I agreed with completely, but in February, hopefully we can start to figure out some ways, because part of the objective was to add additional revenue to the national level so we can knock down these payables all the time. I mean, that was my feeling, that where that money should go if we raise money, and do it light. You know, we really don't want to sit there and have to, you know, destroy a 3-hour, 4-hour program on an important subject by simply pitching incessantly, and then everybody comes back with, oh, here's another way they suckered us into give money. We really want to talk about the issue and use that as an opportunity. And, you know, look at this. Look, we're going to have plenty of opportunities in the next 2 years to do all sorts of stuff.
Thank goodness Zoom tells you when you're talking to yourself. Thanks, Jim.
Your point of information, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that I thought we had already passed some sort of an underwriting motion and that it was in effect, if only on a pilot basis. So am I understanding it's still under construction?
No, we did pass it. The issue that the parliamentarian pointed out to us with the way that motion was crafted was that it, instead of being in kind of classic motion format where you have a bunch of whereases at the top and then some resolving clauses, like here's what we're going to do and the whereases are the reasons why, the way the underwriting motion was originally drafted, it kind of, you know, interleaved both whereases and therefore be it resolved, except they didn't start with whereas and therefore be it resolved. So that was the sense in which it was slightly difficult to tell what was motivational, a whereas clause, and what was therefore be it resolved, this is what we're going to do.
I see.
And so I think that, you know, the point was that we just kind of, after we passed the motion, John Tatum pointed that out to us and we were like, okay, we should fix that. But it has not quite risen to be number one for takeoff just yet. Although we're getting closer.
Okay. So, alrighty, thank you.
Good question, Vanessa. Thank you. I appreciate that. Beth, did you, I think you were looking to be recognized maybe?
I don't think I have my, if I have a hand up, it's a legacy hand. I wasn't ready to for the development task force report when you're ready for that.
Unless there's anything else from strategic planning, I would say go ahead, Beth, with the development task force.
Okay. Pacifica National Development Task Force held its regular monthly meeting on Monday, December 26th of this year with four participants present, roughly a quarter of our usual average, likely at least in part due to the Christmas holiday. Pacifica Executive Director Stephanie Wells joined us as usual. We reviewed recent revenue from each of the various Pacifica business units, the pressing need for Pacifica to generate more adequate funds, and the more promising options to do so. Next regular meeting of the Development Task Force is Monday, January 23rd, our regular meeting time at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 5:30 p.m. Pacifica, as posted to KPFTX. And I've sent that to each of the PNB members and the secretary. I wanted to add to this that I want to reiterate the issue I mentioned in my last month's report, which I don't think I actually got to give at the time because we ran out of time. But the fact that our attendance this year has been hit and hit and hit again by other meetings scheduling their meetings on top of previously scheduled development task force meetings. And we had been averaging 15, 16 people per session through the earlier part of this year. But it also meant that because I was a member of some of those other committees that were scheduled in conflict, I didn't get to, if I'm going to do honor to, or do justice to this previous commitment, I'm then not free to take part in those other meetings. So I would, this is a plea to all of us on the PNB, please to consider the rest of the schedule and other committees and committee members when scheduling meetings. Thank you. I'm done now, Julie.
Yes, thank you. And my computer was again telling me how it was muted. Thank you, Beth. Anyone have any questions for Beth? Next up is the COVID-19 task force. I don't know if there's anything to report there. Or the technology task force, anything to report there?
I have something to report quickly.
Go ahead.
We had a very productive meeting with Professor Dolores Casillas from UC Santa Barbara, talking about Spanish language programming. And the one notable takeaway from it was something that some of us, because we don't know the subject well, was sort of a learning surprise for us. It turns out that some of the most successful Spanish language programming in the country is started at 5 or 4 o'clock in the morning, because people are getting off graveyard shifts and they're getting ready to go early in the morning, and the shows feature lawyer immigration. So that is something to think about, you know, because we're trying to figure out how to solve this problem, and that's something that we got from that. Thank you.
Jim, you cut out for a second there. Would you repeat the thing about the kind of lawyers who were on the
can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. The main takeaway was that the most successful Spanish language programming that she was familiar with were shows starting at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning when people are coming off graveyard shifts and people are getting ready to get up early, go to work in the morning. And they had shows that were done completely in Spanish, but each show had lawyers to help people with immigration issues. So that's something to think about, you know, in terms of a lot of things that we plan, because usually 4 to 5 o'clock is a dead zone. And I certainly didn't know about that until she mentioned that to us. So something to think about. Thanks. And we're going to deal with podcasting and the CPB in the next couple of weeks and months.
Got it. Thank you, Jim. So that gets us all the way through, committee reports. So we're winding down perhaps, on the open portion of the agenda. So the next item on the agenda was unfinished business where we did that, which I gave five minutes to this topic. And it was about the cleaned up version of the underwriting motion. I'm going to recognize Susan.
I move to postpone. And mind you, this may have to postpone more than once, okay, because there is work required on it. I move to postpone until the March meeting, understanding that the underwriting program, pilot program, goes forward, that this is just a records cleanup. So I move to postpone until the regular March meeting.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Darlene. Susan, do you want to say any more to motivate why?
We already had a fairly long discussion that basic Alex wrote this motion, and it was sort of a, it was sort of like an essay. And, we respected the lot of work that went into it, and people understand how to move forward, but nevertheless, the, parliamentarians suggest that we clean it up to put it in a more appropriate format. I have started that effort, but there's a whole bundle of material. So I'm also going to need to consult back with the strategic planning committee about what needs to be included or not included in it. Thanks.
Got it. Thank you. Anyone have any questions, on this motion to postpone to March? James McFadden, go ahead.
I'm just curious, why all the way to March? Why not, you know?
Because I'm doing it and it's very long. If you wish to do it, James, I recommend that you bring it up next month.
Well, I don't.
If you want to rewrite it, go ahead and do it.
I didn't vote for it, so I'm not going to rewrite it. I just wanted to know
exactly.
Why.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, just to give you a little bit of perspective, James McFadden, I think, you know, what's going to wind up happening is, you know, we'll seat the new PNB at the last January meeting. You know, there'll be some, you know, business to take care of in terms of, getting the new PMB acclimated. They'll have to go through election of officers and then they'll have to go through election of directors to be on committees. And so, things like that take a little bit of time. And so that I think is the sense in which suggesting postponing till March is perhaps just recognizing that, you know, that doesn't necessarily happen like that. And, you know, PMB may not be meeting weekly at that point. So.
If I could just add to that comment.
Yeah, go ahead.
The purpose is moving forward. So nothing is awaiting this rewrite. So there is no action that is pending. It is all moving forward, even though Mr. McFadden preferred to not vote for it.
Got it. Jim Dingman, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just also would suggest that Alex Steinberg be asked to, since it was his baby, that he be asked to provide a first draft in conformity, with what is needed. And I fault myself for not asking him that. But if Alex, if you're hearing it, I'm going to call you up and ask you to do that, man. Thanks.
Well, and while we're being honest, I will say that I took Susan's draft and put it on the agenda for this evening, but did not have an opportunity to run it past either, John Tatum or Alex Steinberg. So, I was just trying to, you know, kind of keep this item moving forward. So anyway, fair enough. Okay. So we're at the, yes, James Sagerton, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. And I apologize for not using the raised hand function since I'm back and forth between, Zoom and my phone. I just wanted to clarify the motion has passed. It's a now resolution. The policy is in effect. Stations are free to go forward in attempting to diversify and increase their revenue streams. And this is merely a rewrite to make it conform better to the language, the appropriate language for Robert's Rules and Parliamentary Procedure. And I was just a little concerned when Susan mentioned something about she would be determining what needs to be in there and what doesn't need to be in there. I'm sure she was not referring to any of the policy that's in there. That's already a done thing. And, that is currently our policy and we're implementing it. Is that correct, Susan?
Yes, that's correct. There were many attachments. So this is like 20 pages. Okay. So one of the things that I think needs to be considered is what was the subject of the actual approval and what were exhibits that were attached to it.
Yes, I remember that, being one who did vote for it on that committee. I do remember that. And again, just so your mentioning of what should be included in the language of the motion is a question of what's the background legislative history, so to speak, and it's not the policies that were
absolutely not. No. It's not the policies. It's to adhere to the policies without getting lost in the in exhibit details.
Understood. So it doesn't really matter whether we do it today, tomorrow, next week, next month, because the policy is there.
Exactly. It has been adopted, is being implemented. I know we are at T.
Thank you. I'm good. Julie, you're muted.
And looking at the other screen and not hearing that the screen that is barking at me to say, you're muted. Thank you. Where we are in the agenda is that I believe we are still at the point of Susan has made, and it's been seconded, a motion to postpone this item until March. And I have yet to ask for whether there are any objections to this motion. And so I'm doing that now. And hearing none, we have postponed further action on this item until March. Okay, so that brings us to new business on the agenda. And this is, okay, I will admit to some confusion on my part. So the one item that was there was a motion on Pacifica hybridization that Jim Dingman sent to me in an email, I think, within the last small number of days. I don't remember exactly when. And so my question to Jim is, was this one of the six motions seven. I believe the number was six, that you brought forward a meeting a couple of weeks ago that we referred to the programming committee already?
Well, some people referred it to the programming committee. I did not refer it to the programming committee. This is a very important motion to discuss because this deals with the question of how we modernize the whole network. And so I would want this to be discussed tonight and debated. It's a no-brainer. It basically talks about us integrating ourselves into digital media. People have objected to it because we don't have the resources. I agree, we don't. But at the same time, we have the ability to do certain things in here that are necessary. And this has been discussed and argued for 20 years to whether we should integrate ourselves into digital media. So I think this is an important policy issue to get up front and talk, and I do not want to postpone it, period.
Hang on. We can't actually have conversation about a motion until we have a motion on the floor. So, Jim Dingman, how about if you move your motion?
All right. I'd like to read it first.
And then we'll get somebody to second it. Go ahead.
Whereas all the Pacifica stations have varying levels of integration into existing social media platforms, it will be the policy of the foundation that all analog radio shows that currently are on the air and all future ones going forward will be required by March 2023 to demonstrate their integration into their on-air broadcasts of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Google Live, blogs, or any combination of social media that allows them to enhance their relationship with the listening audience. This will also include the ability to create and broadcast new shows that are exclusively on these platforms, which includes YouTube. The goal is to have each show integrate social media into its on-air delivery and process of communication with its audience in order to build the show's individual footprint. This may include live streaming and use of YouTube as local resources permit. It will be the short-term goal of Pacifica to acquire and set up broadcasting studios that can live stream audio via video as soon as resources permit. Be it resolved that all shows will need to have dedicated producers who are assigned to the task of integrating digital and social media into the normally scheduled analog shows. This will provide a means to have an ongoing broadcast presence beyond simply the allocation of time on a weekly analog schedule. This can be done as creatively as possible by GMs and PDs at various stations in whatever scale their resources permit. But it will be a long-term goal of Pacifica to aim to integrate the analog, digital, and social media in our broadcast output and content creation. All managers and programmers will be evaluated as to their implementation of these policies. The progress of these will be reported in quarterly reports, which will start in March 2023. These will be submitted to the PNB Program Committee and Strategic Planning Committee. The implementation of this will start immediately and will be updated in March 2023 as to its progress and then quarterly from that date on. Pacifica must enter the 21st century as a multi-platform service that delivers content nationally and globally. And I'd like to motivate it for about a minute or two.
Hang on. You need a second before you can motivate.
Okay.
Vanessa?
This is Heather, our second.
Okay, thank you, Heather. Go ahead,
all right.
Jim.
All right, this is an issue that's been debated in the foundation now for 25 years. And it's already being done in varying levels at varying stations. Okay, there's no doubt about it. But we have to have as a, I think as a policy goes a foundation to take the foundation into the 21st century. And that means recognizing that all these different forms of delivery, digital delivery, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, et cetera, these are sources where we, and Twitter, I didn't include Twitter, my mistake. Oh, I did. These are all sources where we can actually broaden our audiences. And yes, I'm well aware of the fact that we lack the resources, we lack the training, and this is a bad time to make this a mandated kind of policy to be implemented. However, I think it is something that we should adopt as a policy because it's a no-brainer. Everybody talks about this, has been talked about now again and again for well over 20 years, and it's time that we actually try to actually move the whole foundation into the 21st century in integrating digital and analog media. And it's being done all over the world, all over the United States. It's been proven to actually be successful. I raised the question of the success of the station out in New Jersey, which had the audience engine that was essentially a completely internet-based radio station. And these things allow us to broaden our product, broaden our content, and really get beyond 168 hours of analog radio, which sticks us and makes us not be able to do certain things. That is, create and be creative. That's all.
I see Vanessa's hand and then Susan's. Go ahead, Vanessa.
So it's a question which Dingman partially addressed in his motivation, which is that it's a bad time for a lot of reasons to try to make this mandatory. So what happens? Okay, they don't have, they may not know how to do this, the people who are affected. So why are we, I understand that it needs to be done or something needs to be done. But why are we trying to make something mandatory that people don't have the resources or the know-how to do? And what happens if they don't do it?
Could I answer that?
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, obviously we're not going to be punitive about this. I mean, you know, look, we have to have people participate in shows and use Twitter accounts. People do that. Some shows already do that. Some shows have blogs accompanying them. I mean, the whole thing is to, you know, integrate, like, listen to NPR shows, for example, which are, of course, completely different, can't be analogized easily. They're well-funded. They will use chat and integrate the social media into the shows, which occurs at all Pacific stations at this point in time. It just is that here's something that sort of says, okay, guys, this is something we want to do as a foundation. We want to integrate ourselves into the 21st century tools of communication. And some of this is not inexpensive, is not expensive to do. To get a Twitter account, you don't have to pay a damn bit of money. So to just have people actually do this and try to experiment with it, I think would actually be, and have a green light to do it, I think would be a step in the right direction.
Chair, may I ask a follow-up question?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay. So, Dingman, I guess I have realized through our conversations that you have a lot of media experience, but other people don't. So if they don't know how to do this, maybe the way to go is to try to set up a structure, some kind of a mechanism to give them the skills to get it done rather than mandating that they do something that may not be feasible. So I guess I'm wondering if you're willing to amend your motion in some form or fashion that takes the spirit of it and sort of, you know, takes it in the direction of putting the mechanism in place so that it can be done rather than say, do this. We know you may not know how to do it, but do it now, and we expect reports. I don't know, I'd just rather be supportive rather than mandating something that may not be realistic.
Well, that's a fair point, Vanessa. And I would be perfectly happy to put in language that says something. Of course, we'll be flexible about how this is going or something like that because, you know, people shake their heads. I mean, you know, the turning around process of turning around the stations is intimately related to these kind of policies. This is the kind of stuff that, you know, hopefully Mark completely agrees with me about this, by the way. Maybe I'm speaking out of turn for Mark, but, you know, we just have to do these kind of things. And yeah, I would want to not be, you know, to implement this and say, if you don't do it, you're going to be shot at dawn. But at the same time, I want to make sure that we start to do this, that we start to do it and see that it's something that is important to do to get us to broaden our audience, to broaden the amount of people listening to us. That's, again, the objective, to get more people listening to the station in different kinds of ways and the content that we put out and allow new content to be created that cannot currently be done given the clogging of the time bridge.
Madam Chair, that's more motivation.
I'm sorry, go, your point, Susan.
My point is, can we continue the conversation rather than just having Jim continue to motivate?
Yes.
Well, so point Vanessa, of personal privilege, please.
Go ahead, Vanessa.
Okay, so Jim was responding to questions that I asked, which was part of the discussion. So I think his comments were absolutely relevant and part of the discussion. So it's not continued motivation. I'm making a suggestion.
You're making that clear. Thank you, Vanessa. My apologies.
Okay, thank you so much. So in terms of the next step, I made a suggestion. Jim, I think, has accepted it. I just looking for the next step in terms of, I don't have necessarily the words to chain, to amend the motion in some form or fashion that it would turn it, incorporate some sort of support system, you know, that we're providing the support for this to happen. So I don't know if Jim does or some other word magician, you know, has the words now, but that's the suggestion, and I'd like to see it, the next step.
All right,
may
you,
I speak to that?
That's
Vanessa's exactly
done,
what I wish
Susan's
to speak
up.
To.
Yeah, yes. Go ahead, Susan.
So we already did deal with this motion and sent it to the programming committee for them to consult with management about how to put together a structure to make this possible. I believe we all agree that the overall goal is right on the money and very, very important. But Jim has this encyclopedic knowledge, and so he writes a long bunch of stuff where it's hard to tell what the whereas is and what the be it resolves are and what is required and what isn't required. For instance, one of the statements is that every station will dedicate two programmers to making these transitions. Houston has one paid employee, one. So when I get that, I mean, my general manager is going to look at it and say, I don't know what this is supposed to be. Stephanie is already engaging someone to do pro bono assistance with us about how to transition our social media and the various forms of networking. I think if we have a very simple motion that endorses that effort and says to everybody, this is a high priority, but not get into the discussion of all of the what you need to do and why it's important and blah, 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 that's a very long motion with a lot of complexity. So I'll make a motion to amend. And the motion is to substitute for Jim's motion that the PNB states that achieving multi-platform capabilities for all programming and across the system is the highest priority, and that management is instructed to set up frameworks for achieving this as soon as possible.
If it's appropriate to second, I'll second.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa.
I may need to write that in a chat.
Yeah, I was trying to get down as much of that as you were saying it as possible.
And my apologies if I don't get it completely correct. I'll write this and folks can comment on it.
Yeah. How about if we you know, keep going with the stack while Susan is putting the actual words in the chat that we can then reread to everybody. Go ahead, Darlene, you're next.
Yeah, hi, Jim. I would like you to, let's see. I find it odd that you keep calling things analog, and I'd like you to take a minute to say why that is and give people examples of what isn't analog so that people understand differences and different opportunities. That's one. The other thing is This is my observation. The way you write a sentence, it isn't obvious that we won't be punitive does not come through in the way the sentences are written. I think that, that grace needs to be given to the people who are reading, what's coming down the pike at them. And yeah, I wrote myself a note agreeing with Vanessa, but then I didn't write exactly what I was agreeing with. So just saying I'm agreeing largely with Vanessa, but do take a minute to please, explain why you're differentiating analog.
You want me to do that right now?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, all our stations are analog radio stations. They are stations that are on a particular analog, of course, is referring to a particular mode of communication. The difference with digital is that digital allows us to intertwine all the different social media platforms with the analog. So you see that in some of the more better-funded stations and some of the better-funded shows in the network. Because Democracy Now! Is a good example of that. That's a TV, social media-driven kind of operation. And, the reason why the language perhaps is harsh, if you will, is that I've been responding, as all of us have, by the constant decline in audience for the past 20 years. And it's been quite disturbing because I see that as the major problem with the finances. So, yeah. I'm thinking of, well, here's something that I see works at other stations that have greater resources. Admittedly, we don't, so we have to be creative. But I also see that this is a way, one of many ways out of it, by directly dealing with questions of programming itself. And the reason why I mentioned to have two people per show is that very often, we need to get younger people working in all the different shows. They're the ones who know how to do this. And this was when we first put it together in the programming committee. We wanted to get specifically Generation Z and millennials, young millennials working with the shows who have the skills that the older producers don't have and work as co-equals with them to try to blend it and make it more optimal in terms of audience. And it's a fact that, live stream shows can sometimes build up audiences far greater, 20, 30,000 people listening per shot than most of our analog shows that we always complain about who don't have anybody listening to them. So this is what it's there. It's there to say, let's try to do this. Let's try to do this now. And I guess the urgency of it is that, I say the harshness of the language is basically based on my feeling of the emergency that we're in. So I apologize for that, but that's how I react to it. I say, we got to do this. And this was written several years ago, actually. So this is an update of what was written and unanimously passed by the programming committee several years ago.
Madam Chair,
could you put me on the stack?
I got you, Jim Sagerton. Go ahead, Susan.
Yeah, I put the motion in the chat.
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think we should just read it for everybody just so that they see, because this is what we're actually talking about. Motion that the PMB states that multi-platform capabilities are the highest priority to integrate system-wide and station-by-station in order to modernize the entire network, and management is instructed to develop the framework for accomplishing this transition as expeditiously as possible. Susan, you had your hand up. Yeah, okay, you're done. So I put myself on the stack, and my question was going to be, Jim, is this what Mark Van Landuit was going to talk about? Mark Van Landuit was going to talk about at tonight's meeting to a degree.
Mark is going to talk about a whole bunch of issues. I'm sure this was going to be one of them. This was separate. I put this in there. I don't know what Mark was specifically going to talk about. Remember, he's the producer. He helped create the Jimmy Dore show, and that's a multi-platform outfit. So I guess he was going to talk about that, but he's had experience in broadcasting in the past 25, 30 years, which of course has involved the use of this. My experience with this is in television. So that's, he'll probably talk about this, but broader next time.
Yeah, yeah. My point was really just to determine whether it would be better to not act on this evening because we hadn't heard from Mark. But you're suggesting the answer to that is not necessarily.
Mark is in 100% accord with these motions, by the way. He and I have talked about this privately.
Yeah, got it. Vanessa, you've already spoken on this, so I'm going to go to Beth. I'll come back to you, but I want to give the people who haven't spoken yet on this motion. So, Beth, go ahead, and then Jim Segerton, and then we'll come back to Vanessa.
Thank you. First, could I ask that the motion please be emailed for those of us who don't see the chat? And I would like to agree with Vanessa regarding multiple complex outsized demands without resources provided. KPFK has been still in the process of being downsized severely over the last couple of years, and that process isn't over yet. We're already stretched way, way, way too thin with increasingly dependent on volunteer effort. And whereas I hear Jim saying, obviously it's not going to be, we're not going to be punitive about this, but it's written punitively and mandatorily. And once it's in writing, we may not be the people who are around who get a hold of this thing and then try to implement it with a vengeance. So it needs to be written in such a way that it's durable and doable, regardless of who's there to implement. And I agree that we need to address the issue, but what we have that social media and the podcast world doesn't have is a network of high-value FCC radio licenses. And while we do need to take into account the new technology, I think it's important that we prioritize what we have now, and because it is our competitive advantage in the marketplace. And because I think it's this, putting the emphasis on the technology really detracts from the necessary focus we need on content. Our content is, as I think our executive director said earlier in the meeting, all over the place.
Beth, your time is up.
So just to sum up then, I'm seeing this for the first time tonight in this meeting, and I'm not prepared to vote on it on that basis, and I would be prepared to move to postpone so that we can consider this more.
Second, postponing.
Okay, so now we have a motion to postpone on the floor. So the conversation now has to be solely about the motion to postpone, not the motion itself. So I don't know if Jim Segerton, if that's what you were prepared to speak to.
I think I can shape my comments into the idea of postponing.
Okay.
And I'd like to ask Jim, tell him that I agree with the essence of what he's saying. But again, to repeat what others have said, it was written 6 years ago, you said yourself, and there are a lot of demands in there that assume that we have staff and personnel to accomplish these things. And in fact, we don't now. So I would like to ask you if you would be willing to take this back to the drawing board. I would vote for this as a general statement of Pacifica policy without all the, you know, two producers must for each show and et cetera, all those details, you know, requirements. So I think if we postpone this, you could go back and create a Pacifica policy that I would vote for. And in the meantime, we could go ahead with the motion to, you know, have the executive director move ahead with implementing or, you know, finding things we could vote to implement, in a very practical way now. So I'm asking that as a question to Jim. Would he be willing to go back and change this from a motion with lots of directives to a policy for Pacifica that we could vote on and make the policy of Pacifica?
I'd be willing to rewrite it, but I also think that, you know, we're past due dealing with these issues. These issues, again, I come at it from a broadcaster point of view. Someone was saying I come out with these things that they get very authoritarian. I'm a broadcast authoritarian kind of person. My thing is on broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting. So some of the things here, we got plenty of producers at each of the stations who do these things already and know them. So I don't want to water it down. I mean, you know, people want to talk about how we turn the stations around. This is one of many measures that are needed to turn the stations around. And people, I think producers already are familiar with these kind of issues. It's just a question of, you know, how to integrate them. And I see, you know, the only
point of order. We have to stick to the motion to postpone component. So, as opposed to the merits of the motion itself.
Well, again,
Jim asked you a question and you answered the question, but then continued on, I think. So.
yeah, I'd be willing to rewrite it, but again, you know, the essence is that I think we should do this right now, frankly. That's my opinion. I'll rewrite it, but I don't want to water it down. I don't want to be wishy-washy about it, et cetera. Thank you.
Thank you. Beth, did I address your point of order?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Okay, just checking to make sure.
John has a question.
Sean, go ahead. And this is on the motion to postpone, right?
Yes. Postpone to when?
Oh, excellent. Sean, you always ask the most insightful questions. Thank you.
And so succinctly, too.
Yes, exactly.
okay, so the answer is?
Who made the motion to postpone? Beth made the motion to postpone. Beth, did you have a time frame in mind?
I would ask probably you. I think you probably have a better oversight overview of what else we need to get done this month and where it might fit. And I would defer to your judgment on that.
So my judgment is I don't know that we have as busy of an agenda for the meeting on the 12th as we do for the meeting on the 19th. On the 19th, we're going to be, you know, in closed session for a good chunk of the meeting. So I do not want to postpone it to the 19th. But I don't know whether postponing it to the 12th, you know, allows Jim Dingaman enough time to recraft it. So that's really up to Jim.
Chair, my hand is up. It was up before, but I'd like to speak to the postponing.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so when I first started to speak, I was going to speak against postponing because I agree with Jim. The more information he gave, it is urgent. Now I kind of get the essence of what he's saying, but I hear him agreeing that, you know, he'll take time to kind of rework it. And hopefully it would be done at the next meeting. And I'm wondering, especially the part where I'm hoping Jim would be incorporating language about working with youth and, you know, their a natural ability to, you know, integrate into social media and how important that is. So I'm wondering if, I think the language is already there. If Jim would accept some, contributions, hopefully not interference from myself and maybe Susan or whomever. Cause I think Susan has given us a good start. So all of this goes to in terms of yes, postpone to next week, based on what Susan has started with, incorporating some more stuff that Jim said. So yes, postpone to next week. I'm supporting that.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Beth, is that a legacy hand?
That's a legacy hand. Thank you. Yes.
Gotcha. It's gone
it's
now.
It's not visible on this end of the, so forgive me.
No worries.
Sharon, ask one question.
Yeah, go ahead, Sharon.
If it is postponed, will it include language on how to in that postponing?
Well, I think the motion to postpone. hang on one second. My sense is that the motion to postpone is simply a motion to postpone. You can't really load the motion to postpone up with additional postpone it and change it to say blah, 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 that kind of defeats the point of a motion to postpone. But your point is well taken, Sharon, that, sort of, if Jim Dingaman would, take under advisement the fact that the more how to get there that he can put in to the motion, the more likely he's going to get support from more directors next week. Is that what you were trying to say there, Sharon?
Yes, because right now I don't really understand how it's going to be accomplished.
Okay, can I speak to that quickly? I will agree to postpone. And how it can be accomplished is there are so many people already on the air who are familiar with social media, Twitter in particular, Instagram, TikTok, that's more younger people. And that gets to what Vanessa raises. So to implement it is to get people on the air working with broadcasters to do it. It's a creative process that producers can indeed do. It's not something to say, okay, here you learn Facebook, here you learn Twitter, integrate it into your show. It's already being done around the United States in all sorts of different radio stations. It's not it's a no-brainer. It just is
point of order.
We are behind in doing
it. Yeah. Thanks, Jim.
I'm familiar with all these things that you mentioned as well, but that doesn't mean that I know how to use it.
Thank you, Sharon. I see Heather Gray's hand up. Heather, is this about the motion to postpone?
I just wanted to say, as chair of the programming committee, I want to be a part of this discussion as well with Jim.
Oh, good. Yeah. Appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. If there's no further discussion on this, are there any objections to the motion to postpone this item to next week's meeting? Hearing no objections, we're postponing this to next week's meeting. Let me scroll back up here. Which means we're at the item on the agenda, which is a motion to move into executive session at a time certain of 10:30. Well, we only missed that by 40 minutes, so.
Don't move.
Is there a second?
Second, Beth.
Yeah, thank you. Are there any objections to the motion to move into closed session? Hearing none at 11:11 p.m. We will move into closed session.